baby.
We in here. Yeah, we in here.
Y'all better get comfortable with saying black.
We in here. Yeah, we in here.
Black versus the Board of Education.
Cause we came here, we're the best now. We in here. Yeah, we in here. Cause we came here, we're the best now. And you know we in here.
That's why we are indeed a whole mood.
That's it.
Well, happy Monday and welcome to another episode of Black versus the Board of Education. My name is Miss Laureen and I welcome you into this space. And we have a good one about to pop off today. We have the VP of Sac City Unified, Mr. Jazjit, in the building. Yes, indeed. But before we actually give the floor over to you, I want to make sure that they know who's in the building because I'm really excited. We have some younger people joining us today. And I want to make sure that we start with you. We want you to introduce yourself. Tell us, I don't know, something a little funky about you, something that you think we should know. You can tell me your age. You can tell me the school you go to. Just introduce yourself just so everybody knows that you're in the building.
My name's Cameron Skinner. I go to JFK and I'm 16 and I like to play with Rubik's Cubes.
Rubik's Cubes. Okay. So you smart.
I wouldn't say that, but it's funny.
Look, I've never been able to solve one, so I'm going to give you that.
You know, sometimes scrambling the colors is funnier than, like, solving it. I'm just scrambling.
I feel that. Yeah. I feel all of that.
The colors amaze me.
Okay. And you brought your friend with you today.
Of course.
So introduce yourself. Let us know who you are.
Hello, my name is Crispy.
Crispy, about the voice, though. Can I just start there? You're 16?
Yeah.
You have one of those voices, sir. No. It's not your fault. It might be your parents' fault. It's not your fault, but you have this thing about your voice. It's all deep and stuff. At 16,
yeah,
you're going to be a problem. But go ahead, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Crispy. I'm 16. I love playing basketball and plan to continue.
Okay. So you played this year?
Yeah.
Okay. You're at JFK too? So that means you played under Mr. JT?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. That gives me something to go on. And before I start with you ladies, or before I go to you, I actually want to kick it to Carlos because he's waiting in the back and we don't see him yet. And I guess I'll add him since they're looking around talking. Mr. Carlos, go ahead and introduce yourself, please, because we don't want to leave you out of the discussion.
Most definitely. Carlos Simpson, child advocate and community coach. Let's just say that. And it's an honor and pleasure to be here.
A community coach. We love that because they need more of that. Miss Keela. Hey, girl. Hey.
Hey. It's your girl, Keela.
Okay. So why your mic so high? Like you're not even up there. Like, just pull it down. So there you go.
I was scared I was going to break it, so I didn't touch it.
Well, here you are. It's alive.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's your girl, Keela. Oh, now I'm loud. Okay.
You okay? Tell them something about you because they don't know you, right? And so we want to make sure they know a little bit of something about you.
So I am a mentor and a site lead here at BYLP. Currently, my school is on spring break, so.
All right. We love it. And Sherman says, hey, he's in the chat.
Hi, Sherman.
He's in the chat. And I don't know. There you go. Hey, hey, Sherman. And then we'll go over to Miss Quinessa. Hey, Laura.
Hi, everyone. I'm Quinessa. I'm a youth advocate here. Sherman, if you don't go back to sleep, I'm going to come get you.
Uh-oh.
Sherman has a concussion. He is not supposed to be on the computer.
He should be laying down. So get yourself somewhere. Sit down, sir. That's what I heard. And so we have our special guest joining us today. And a lot of us, this is our first time meeting you. I haven't been to the board meetings over at Sac City in a very long time. And it's not because, you know, I don't want to be there. It just seems like other school districts are having more problems than y'all. So go ahead and introduce yourself and we will start the discussion.
All right. Do I say all the things they said?
I mean, if you want to say you're 16 and go to JFK, be my guest.
So my name's Jasjit Singh. I am the VP for Sac City Unified. I am not 16 years old. I'm 16 plus 21. It's hard to say I'm in my 30s, but that's where I'm at. I also love playing basketball. Okay. I still play. These knees are catching up.
Come on now. Talk to them about the knees now.
Theragun, Icy Hot, and stretching. Start stretching now, and you won't have these issues when you get to my age. I think that's it. We'll start with that. That's just
okay.
Who I am.
Okay. So I'm going to come over here. Gentlemen, do you want to, so that's one of you want to kick us off with a question for our guest? They're going to look at each other.
You got it.
Thank you.
Do I need to let y'all think about it a little bit? Yeah. Okay, yes, perfect. Carlos, it's on you. And he's on mute. Okay. Yeah, that's yeah, there you go. Hey.
I was made aware that you did some work at the San Francisco Foundation, right? And yes. I'm just wondering if your experience throughout that process, how it changed your viewpoint on things and how did it equip you for what you're doing right now, because that's a pretty prestigious place.
Yeah, Fred Blackwell is a pretty prestigious guy, so he's still there. He's still the CEO. I'll kind of talk about how I got there. That kind of helps set the story for why even San Francisco Foundation. I was a high school teacher who decided to go to law school. And after law school, I ended up working in the nonprofit space, moved out to New York. When I came back, there was just this position. I was sitting and studying for the bar exam. And San Francisco Foundation had a multicultural fellowship opportunity. So it was specifically for folks of color to get us into this philanthropic space. But that space was supposed to be how to learn from philanthropy and then go out and become like an executive, a nonprofit executive director or something like that. My class flipped it and we're like, we don't want to go to the nonprofit space. We want to stay in philanthropy because people like us are not in philanthropy. Right. And philanthropy has a lot of ugliness to it. It's, you know, sad to say, but it's money hoarding from decades and generations and generations. And then they give out a small percentage and we all feel good about it. San Francisco Foundation is gigantic. I'm pretty sure their endowment's still over $1 billion. And we worked in the five counties of the San Francisco Bay Area. So I was raised in the East Bay. And to be able to go back to my communities and my neighborhoods and be able to work in that space was really impactful. And in just 2 years, less than 2 years, we got to work in San Francisco, in Richmond, in Oakland, El Cerrito. And I got some amazing mentors out of that space. My favorite guy, Landon Williams, a former Black, well, not a former, always a Black Panther. He was someone who I got to be. He mentored me in a way where he made me realize that our struggles are really common. Something that I think a lot of folks have really forgotten about. I think we get caught up in feeling like we're all in like these buckets, like we're all in it for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then we start competing against one another, which is how the community, I think, gets divided. If we really think about as minorities, we're actually the majority, but we don't think like that. And he helped me remember that that's the space I should be in. So long story short, that place shaped me a lot. And so even though I worked there for just under 2 years, it's a place that left lasting impressions and friendships. And I still talk to Fred, so.
And I neglected to say this episode is called Navigating Education with VP of Sac City Unified School District, Jasjit Singh. And so what I'm wondering, what brought you to Sacramento and specifically the Sacramento Unified School District? Because I don't know what year you came out here, but in around 2018, they were actually designated number one in the state for disproportionate discipline of Black children, suspending our future. Or no, that was the capital of suspensions. They were number one ahead of LA Unified. And now I'm hearing they're doing a lot better. So what brought you here to Sacramento?
Yeah. Jobs.
Okay. So come on.
It wasn't me. It was my wife.
Okay.
So my wife's a physician at UC Davis. So she was trained at Highland Hospital. He was trained at Highland Hospital in Oakland, and there was just a position, and we came out here. So I grew up in the Bay, but then I went to high school in Fresno, so the Valley is kind of home, but I never thought of Sacramento as a place I'd land. You can argue, I'll tell you guys this, you can argue all you want with your significant other on where you're going to live, I guarantee you'll never end up in that spot. So we used to fight about, we should move to Fresno, we should move to the Bay, and we ended up in Sacramento.
Oh, that was a compromise. You know, it's kind of in the, you know, It's there.
But I've become defensive of Sacramento. I don't let people say it's an extension of the Bay. I'm like,
it's not. So it's
not. Don't say that stuff to us. Mm-hmm.
Not by no water.
Yes. Mm-mm. No. And I've bought into it, right? So it's actually that opportunity to serve the community for her mm-hmm. that brought me out here. And my job was flexible. So okay. our office is in San Francisco. And then we went remote because of the pandemic. And that really allowed me to start diving deeper into the work that we do. I already work in youth programs. That's mm-hmm. the work that I've been doing from before. And some of that data that you're talking about is what kind of intrigued me to start looking into the district and seeing that if I'm going to raise my family here, mm-hmm. what can I do to make an impact and make sure that that's not the type of district my children are going to grow up in.
I love that. Ms. Quinessa.
I'm really intrigued to know why you went from being a teacher to wanting to go to law school, because in the advocacy work we've been doing, I've been interested in trying to pursue law now because of some of the cases that we've gotten. So
It was almost purely a financial situation that mm-hmm. kind of drove me into that direction. I was a teacher right out of college. I got an emergency credential and mm-hmm. I started to get my master's in education, and I was teaching Punjabi as a foreign language in Kerman, which is a small town outside of Fresno. So there's a large Punjabi Sikh population. So I'm come from a Punjabi Sikh background.
Okay.
So there's plenty of us in the Valley. I'm sure you've seen plenty of folks who look like us, and the Valley has been home for a long time. So what happened is there just weren't jobs. This is during that economic downturn back in 20, God, when was this? 20 something, I don't know, 20. 20-somethings when jobs are scarce. And I was told that even after getting my credential, I probably will not get a full-time position
teaching. Oh.
And I was only teaching three or four grades, and I was or three or four periods, and I was finding time to study on the side. And a part of me was like, I started seeing issues in the district. I came in first day of school with a tie mm-hmm. and like a sweater, and I was like, I read the contract. It says you got to dress up because if you dress for success, the kids will think you dress for success. I walk in, everybody's wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and then none of the teachers are dressed up. I was like, why am I the only one following these rules right now?
And the kids, because you was new.
Yeah. And I was like, the kids looked at me, they're like, why are you dressed like that? I was like, okay, this is a bad start. But basically, there just weren't any positions. So I realized that maybe through law, I can work on advocacy and figure out ways to create change in the district. That's not even what happened. It was actually a master's in like public policy would have been a good idea too. So I'm not saying don't go to law school, but there are other options. I was just naive. I was first in my family to finish college, first in my family to do any sort of higher education. So I was like, law school sounds great. So I just went.
Okay. Gentlemen, did you find a question? Are y'all still thinking? We're putting them on the spot, right? This is their first time here. And I like to put people on the spot, but I don't want y'all to become anxious. So do you have a question that, or should I just go over here to Miss Keela?
I do kind of have a question.
Put your mouth on the microphone, baby.
Did you play basketball at a higher level at any chance?
I did not.
You are kind of tall. How tall are you?
Yeah,
you
I'm 6'4".
Yeah, I'm 4. That's a okay. tall man.
Okay.
I started taking it a lot more seriously after high school. I just stayed playing in leagues, playing on like traveling teams, and got a lot more serious about it. So I still run tournaments. I still play in tournaments. But yeah, in retrospect, probably should have played a lot more when I was your age.
A lot more, he said.
I transitioned from soccer. I played soccer until I was 14 or 15.
Okay.
Then I started playing basketball in high school. So it was also like a whole different transition. And I think, but it definitely helped me. Like, I think the movement and the ability to move that I had in soccer is why I can move as a big man. I mean, most people are just like, you know, like little boxes walking around. So
you said little boxes?
Yeah, even like stump feet. I don't know. The bigs, the way the bigs move.
Uh-huh.
I don't move like that.
Cameron?
This isn't going to be like the most serious question, but like, what was your like first aspiration, like what did you want to be like when you were younger?
You know, this is such a, everybody asks this question, it's a good question. I really am one of those people who doesn't remember what I wanted to be when I grew up, quote unquote.
Uh-huh.
Just my dad was a truck driver, my mom worked in a factory, so I was exposed to trucking as a kid, and I would just like sit on my dad's lap and we'd like drive around the yard. I don't know if I wanted to be a truck driver, but I definitely wanted to do something that allowed me to actually like work with people. So I always thought as a truck driver, you get to meet people, you see new places. So I thought that was really interesting. But I learned really quick that my parents definitely want me to get an education. So that idea went out the door. I feel like I was pushed towards the typical go to law school, go to med school, go to this, just because your parents are trying to move themselves out of a lower economic status. And they turn to their children to move them into a higher socioeconomic status so that you can benefit the community and benefit yourselves. So I feel like a lot of my childhood was just molded by what folks think I should do. And I don't think until I got to college where I just was really not doing great in biochem. I don't know why I was a biochem major. I thought biochem was a good major because it was biology plus chemistry, not realizing biochem is not biology or chemistry. It's just like a whole different beast. And I was really struggling. Periodic table, I was like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. So I took a poli sci class, just did really well in it. And I think in college is when I realized I want to do something along those lines, something in the political legal space.
Ms. Keela.
How do you think COVID affected education?
I think COVID did a real number on education. I think the assumptions that we had as community that, oh, kids can just sit on their laptops and study, also assuming that everybody has Wi-Fi access,
right?
Everybody has a laptop, and that everybody will have people who are staying at home to watch their children, really completely showcase the level of disconnect that community, certain folks had with certain community members. When you looked at communities, especially in the lower socioeconomic side of Sacramento, you had folks who still had to go to work. There was no COVID time off, right? You had kids who stayed home by themselves for 8 hours a day because their parents were at work because they were considered essential workers, right?
Right.
And all that to say, I think the learning loss that we got during COVID probably will not be corrected. I mean, as sad as that is, I don't know how you catch up on 2 years of school when you're already behind, when we already have kids who are not graduating at the rates that they should be graduating. We have kids who are not reading at the level they should be reading. And now we add two more years of not reading at that level. I don't think they're going to catch up. And that's really tough to say. You know, it's really tough to figure out how are we going to help those kids. But it also should be a lesson learned that those assumptions really hurt us during COVID.
Yeah. And I think what kind of added insult to injury, especially in Sac City Unified, you guys had a teacher strike that happened as well. And so I read the other day, you guys are going to be making up days of school at the beginning of the next 2 years to cover that learning loss, allegedly. I don't know. And so I'm wondering, how are you all dealing with the teachers union, balancing act that you all have to do in terms of keeping your teachers happy, keeping the parents happy, making sure the kids are getting what they need? How are you, what is the tone of the board now to make sure that we're doing all of those things, to make sure, because make sure the kids are great. I don't know nothing about these adults. I don't really care. My concern is the children. So how are we insulating them?
So the teacher strike was kind of what brought me into this space in the first place. I saw that there's a strike going on. Being a former teacher, I was like, I'm just going to go to this strike. It'll be fun.
Let's go see what's happening.
I mean, I'm all for like protests and being out there and just seeing what's happening, right? Because that's the only way you get to lay the land of like what's really happening. And I try not to get too much information from the news. I just try to show up and on the side and see what's happening. When I got there, I joined a group of parents. So it wasn't even about the teachers. I joined this group of parents that had sat inside a Cerna center and were protesting.
Yes.
So they locked themselves in essentially, right? They sat there, they're like, we're not leaving until you guys figure this out, right? And they were waiting for the superintendent to come out. And I don't think he came outside.
He did not.
So I showed up to that and I started talking to the parents and they're like, we just want someone who listens, right? When I thought about that comment, I realized, if you're an elected public official, the only job you should really have is to listen and then to help formulate your own opinions. And when you cannot give people what they want, you need to have a really good answer on why you're doing what you're doing, right? Folks need to feel confident that you're actually going to take steps that will address their concerns, because not everybody's always going to be happy with you, right?
100%.
So with the teachers, what I realized, like, hey, that's 70% of our workforce for a district, you have to figure out a way to keep them happy,
right?
And it's not just about the pay. It was about making sure that they're getting the supportive services they need. We have teachers who are still buying school supplies. I'm sure you have teachers who buy supplies for you. You realize those supplies are not supplied by the district or anybody. They're buying those supplies themselves, right?
And that's someone crazy.
Someone put up an interesting comment yesterday. They're like, you don't see certain other jobs where people have to buy their own stuff. You don't see firemen buying their own hoses. You don't see, you know, other folks buying like syringes and whatever else folks use, you know. And all that made me think is that we definitely need to make sure that the relationships we have are open, and we have to have an open, clear line of communication. So I'll just say that's where we are at right now. We have a board that talks to our teachers union. We have a staff, and we're currently negotiating, hoping that Lisa Allen will become our full-time superintendent, and that she has a really good relationship with her staff, who actually constantly is in touch with all the unions, and not just the teachers. We have UPE, which is the principals. We have SEIU, which is our custodians and bus drivers. The thing is, if they're not happy, how can they perform in a way that's going to be conducive of learning for these children, right? So it's kind of that balancing act. And in terms of the days adding, that has been a rough one, because folks are like, we have plans, right?
Yeah.
And I don't deny people that they have those plans. But one thing I said on the days that day, I was like, I wasn't here when this happened.
Right.
I came to the board after we decided to not make up those days. The district could have and should have worked harder to make up those days at that time.
Correct.
They did not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sit here and allow $47 million to go away. Those $47 million are.
And that's the fine that you're facing if you don't make up this time.
Yes.
Oh, good.
And if we hold $47 million, is a lot of money. I don't know. I'll never make 40. I think any of us combined will make $47 million. If you do, I should be friends with you and hang out. But the reality is, we can't do that to our kids.
No.
And the folks who will suffer the most is actually the folks who have incurred the highest level of learning loss.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we have to also address the fact that socioeconomic status, again, I've been saying this a lot already today, will affect what those 8 days will mean to you. For some families, 8 days is 8 days that you're losing of vacation time. For some families, 8 days is 8 days that the kids get to eat.
Yeah.
They get to go to school and the parents get to go back to work, and their children are fed and cared for those 8 additional days this year and 8 additional days next year. So I'm trying to balance that, but I don't think anything is more important than maintaining half a, that's a lot of money.
It's a heck of a lot of money. Carlos?
Yeah, you were speaking earlier about having a mentor like Brother Williams, right? Was that correct?
Yes.
So dealing with a gentleman like that, and he's a very unique guy, how did that give you an opportunity to realize what you could fight for in regards to young Black children in education? And I also wanted to ask, kind of like, do you see a correlation between some of the Punjabi kids and some of the Black kids and what they go through in education?
Yeah, so with Landon, it was really just an intrigue to talk about our struggle as a community, and then acknowledging the struggles of the Black community and also acknowledging how the Black civil rights movement, and I say Black civil rights movement because it was Black folks who put their bodies on the line, that allowed a lot of South Asians and other Asian groups to feel insulated and feel supported, right? We benefited from the civil rights movement like any other community that's marginalized. Those conversations were really real with Landon, and they kind of led me to finding like deeper reasons to connect and work harder for our shared communities. I think in terms of Punjabi kids, I think the easiest way to say is like, we cannot group folks into a category, right? Oftentimes what we do is folks will take the Asian category and say, these kids are model minorities. These kids are killing it. They're like the smartest kids in school, right? I'm like, you have to do data deep dives into this, right?
Disaggregate it.
100%. If you take the Asian data and you break it down by Southeast Asian, South Asian, then you go deeper into, well, what privilege brought you to this country? If you look at people who are South Asian, specifically from India, there's caste privilege. There's other reasons you got here, right? So as a Sikh, I didn't have any of those privileges. As a blue collar family, I didn't have any of those privileges. My parents did not come here because my dad's a professor at some university or something. He just came here and he literally had that story. Like, I had $5 in my pocket and I tried to figure it out. And only a few years ago, I found out the guy was washing cars. He never told me he was washing cars when he got to this country. Mm-hmm. So the correlations I see, going back to what you're saying, Carlos, is struggling with identity, trying to figure out how you hold on to who you are while not letting others take away or appropriate your culture and mm-hmm. your community in a way. I struggle when I see our own kids trying to be okay with how they look, how they see themselves, how they're perceived. And I was talking to someone yesterday about the issues that we run into is when our communities try to work together on issues, we get caught up on some terrible things. Like, kids think it's okay to say the N-word when you're not.
That's what I was going to ask you.
So, uh-huh.
Someone talked to me about that yesterday. And I said, well, the issue is that's not a conversation I can have with the Black community, right?
Yeah.
The N-word is the N-word, and that N-word is not owned by me, right? So those are conversations that young folks have to have with their friends on whether they should be using that. Personally, I don't think anybody should be using it unless they're Black. But you talk to enough kids and there's a varying opinion on who should be using the N-word. I'm going to look at these two. And
uh-huh. You see me? I'm going to turn right on over here because you're listening, right? You're listening to what he's saying. So do you believe that everybody should be able to say the N-word, or do you think that it specifically should be a word that the Black those in the Black community can?
I'll let you take a take at this first.
Okay.
Well,
thank you.
I mean, to me, in a way, I can say it kind of varies, but at the same time, it really is mainly more like a Black thing.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean it varies? Because, you know, I'm going to challenge you on everything that comes out of your mouth. So I need y'all to understand where you're at. So when you say it varies, what does that mean?
Because I can say, because for me, I've been around a lot of other type races, like Mexican, like I'll say Latino individuals that like to use the word too.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of my other friends also say the word. And I, in a personal way, I feel like I don't feel much offense to it, but mm-hmm. I know a lot of people do also. So it's like, if you're around certain people, you can say it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people that take offense to it, like, you don't want to offend somebody, obviously, by saying it straight to their face. Like, there's different versions of the N-word for other people say, and it can, like, offend a lot of people. But to me, personally, I feel like it's just a word-ish, but at the same time, uh-huh. it's more like a...
So do you give your friends passes? This is what I'm hearing from you. Like, when you're saying, well, it depends. And some of my friends, like, so you give them a pass to say the word.
They say it either way. If I do it though. Mm-hmm. So I'm at the same time, I'm not going to, like, cause even if some of them are grow up saying it. So it's like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, don't say it at all. I mean, don't say it around me, but you know what I'm saying? But don't, mm-hmm. I'm not going to stop you. Cause I can't stop you. You're your own person. So in the end, I'm just say. That's how I feel. That's how I feel.
Okay. They called you Baby Don Cornelius. Do you know who that is? Don Cornelius?
Cornelius sounds familiar, but I don't really know.
Soul Train. Cam.
I'm going to say that, like, I feel like it varies.
You too. Y'all some varying people. Go ahead.
Okay. I've met a lot of different people in my life. I've been around a bunch of different races.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm not, I feel like it's a Black person, like, culture thing, I feel like, more. Because
mm-hmm.
it's kind of weird when, like, if you walk around, you, like, if you see, like, a Mexican person or a different race, like, call you that, because you then looking like, well, like, why did you say that? It's
right.
Kind of not your thing. It's not in your lane. But then there's also that, like, demographic of, like, it's also where you, like, live at and, like, where your area is. Because some people do in a household grow up and do say that, like, that may be what they use in their household. And for me, it's like, I don't, like, who am I to tell you what you can and can't do, when at the end of the day, as long as you don't hurt me, as long as it doesn't harm me, I'm fine.
Okay. So I'm gonna challenge that. You said as long as it doesn't hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other part that you said is that you think it's a cultural thing for the Black community. So if other people are saying it and it doesn't offend you, but it offends somebody else in the Black community, is it still wrong?
I feel like, okay, because you said, like, is it wrong?
Yeah, is it wrong? Is it? Do you stop them? Do you say, hey, that's not cool?
I would, like, for me, I would say that don't say it because that person feels some type of way about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you are around someone who doesn't like feel like that's respectful to them,
mm-hmm.
don't say it. Respect them. Respect their boundaries.
Okay.
But if you're around me, like I'm gonna be like, look, you're your own person. I'm not gonna tell you what to do. But when you're around that person or anybody who feels disrespected by it, you need to learn to respect that.
Okay. And so again, I'm put this out there because this is an ongoing thing on multiple campuses around this area. Is there a difference between the word with the hard R, E-R, and the A?
Yeah.
And then if it's okay and you don't want to step on people's toes, what do you expect your administrators to do when other people are using this word and you become offended by it?
Well, I'll go first on this one. But
I mean, you just go ahead.
Yeah. But I feel like there is a difference because when you say the A, it's more like a friendly gesture. I feel like that's what it's turned into. It's more of a, oh, hey, like I've acknowledged you as someone that I can consider a friend or someone that I mm-hmm. use to, as a companion.
Okay.
But when you use ER, it's more than a derogatory term. It turns into something that is like used in a harmful and hateful way.
We've seen a lot where students will use it with an A, but with the intention of being offensive. So they'll add something at the beginning. Can I swear?
I mean, okay. I'll allow it this one time.
So the bitch ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
At that point, is it like, what do we expect administration to do? If it's, well, I wasn't offended before when they said it with an A, but now
with
I'm
this other
offended.
Y'all on the hot seat today, baby. I'm like, I'm on the hot seat today, baby. Come on, Crispy.
Carlos.
Carlos said he put up the church finger.
I'm not going to take you off the hot seat, but I will even come to your
defense. I'm trying to show you a lifeline. Watch him. Go ahead.
So you both agree that, and I'm not going at you guys, okay? But you both agree that the is a version of the word ER, though, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm not coming after y'all. I'm just kind of putting it out there. So the thing about it, like, if it kind of derived from a derogatory term, if you look at society, right, most cultures have a derogatory way of calling. Most cultures, other people have derogatory ways of calling their names, right? You know, and I'm not going to say any of the things, but there's a derogatory word. I've never seen a culture that took pride in saying that derogatory name towards each other, though. Like, you don't really hear Hispanics saying things like what you would say. You don't really hear certain cultures call each other, and that just always puzzled me how it turned in, because I'm a victim of it as well, because I used to say it was a term of endearment, right? And unfortunately,
well, NWA said that we taking the word back and they can't have it back. And so I think that music has influenced the way in which we have interpreted certain things. Now, I'm not going to put it all on y'all, but at home, I use the word, right? I know when and where and how to use the word in my home. I don't go and mix company and do things, just like there's a lot of other things that I don't go and mix company and say. Like the conversation we was just having, I would not say that in mixed company.
Right.
Right. And so I think that I'm not going to sit up and give anybody a pass because I don't know what other cultures do. I don't know what other words they use. They talk different languages. I don't know what language they're speaking or how they're using the words that they're using. I've never seen our community take one of their words and continue to refer to them by those. And so we have to be clear what we're saying. Music has made it popular. It has popularized it. However, you still have a remnant of people in these school systems who use the ER and they know what it means. They mean to be offensive, and there has to be some sort of way that we can hold people accountable.
So this sounds really difficult to regulate, right?
It is hella difficult.
Said, I say these words, but I don't say that word. I say the big ass.
Yeah. Oh, you say that one.
But without the ending, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a hooper.
Hey, I'm not gonna lie. The amount of N words I hear at 24, probably might be the only word people use. Like,
yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, you know. And I'm getting offended. I'm not gonna lie to you guys. I'm getting offended for Black people, and then I have folks playing with me who are not offended. I'm really confused.
Me too.
Like, I'm like, yo, me too. You can't be using that word. You're not Black, and the ref is Black. And they're like, they'll be cussing out the ref with that word. I'm like, this is so confusing. And the refs are like, oh, no. I'm like, I'm so confused these days. So you pointed out to the music piece.
Yeah.
So I aged myself already. So now you know which generation I grew up in, which mm-hmm. means all you've heard in hip hop and growing up listening to hip hop, it's the only word you've heard, mm-hmm. right? And I'm just of the generation that just, you sing along and then you just don't say the word.
That part.
You just sing along and you just don't say the word. I was in God, what country is this? I was in Iceland or something.
Period.
I went to Iceland.
Go off.
For my brother's bachelor party. We went to Iceland.
Oh, we went to Iceland for a bachelor party?
This is what this guy was doing. He's my brother.
Wow.
Period.
He's a different
person. He's that rich things they be talking about.
The rich things.
We went on Wow Airlines.
What's that?
Hold on. Yeah, that's the international Spirit
Plus.
Wow.
I paid for water. I remember. I paid for water, which I think Spirit does. And I refuse to fly Spirit. That's a whole different conversation.
Oh, but,
you know, what was bothersome is very, very very non-Black or brown country, right? And, you know, you go to these countries and, like, everybody went out clubbing, right? And you can just hear the music. And I remember walking in. And just like Tupac is playing. I'm like, cool, right? Just like bob my head, right? And everybody's singing along. I'm like, cool. Then Tupac starts saying Tupac things and everybody's singing along, like word for word. Yep. And I'm like, the darkest person here. I'm not saying it. Why are you guys saying it, right? And I realize it's that somehow, and this is happening right now because Punjabi music is getting really big and a lot of collaborations with hip hop artists, right? But one thing I've appreciated is that the hip hop artists who they can say the word as much as they want. You don't see the singer saying it
right
on their verses, right? It's a collaboration. They'll say the word and that's fine, mm-hmm. right? You can say the word because that's your word, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's bothering me though is that that is also leading to it might be okay to say it. If it showed up on this track, it might be okay to say it.
Yeah.
And I think that the reason I'm assuming young people struggle with this is because it is culturally normalized. It's mm-hmm. so normalized that if you were to tell someone, hey, don't say that, they're going to be like, what's wrong with this dude?
Yeah. Are you like, all right?
Oh, you know, Mr. I'm stickler. I don't say, don't tell me what to say kind of thing. And I know that's what you deal with when you're young, right? So I think it's really about having community conversations, right? In your own circles, in your own spaces. Like I constantly am checking people that I know,
mm-hmm.
not say it. And there's unlearning to do, right?
Absolutely.
I'm not going to sit here and be like the world's perfect person, say that word's never come out of my mouth when I was young, right? But I was like, I go quickly unlearned. Once you get educated and you realize, what are you saying that for? Do you know why people use that word, right? And there's, I don't know in what world, the ER is okay, but it's ever. Not ever.
Ever.
And anybody who says that is offensive right away, right? Like that's just a problem and that's purposeful. You see people purposely trying to say that word
mm-hmm.
to offend kids, to get our kids into trouble. And for a group of children, especially Black kids who are at the top of like getting expelled and suspended. And then I always try to look at things from what was the whole picture, right?
Right.
Suspension, expulsions. And you guys know expulsions come to us.
I know, I do. Mm-hmm.
And if you look at my voting record, I'm consistently trying to not vote to expel kids.
Well, and okay, so before you go on, because I know like a lot of those expulsion conversations happen in closed session.
Yes.
And so we never know what the discussion is, but you're asked to vote whether to approve it. We hear the vote.
Yes.
We don't know what the actual conversation is. And that's the thing that concerns me. Because looking at some of the times where we've had to go into the extension to suspension meetings and looking at this packet that they're producing on these young people, I'm never really seeing the whole story. So I'm wondering, when you guys get your expulsion packets that you're talking about behind closed doors, do they give you, and I already know the answer to this, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. do they give you the whole story or do you just get the packet that the school has decided to put together and just bring to you all as if it's the Bible truth?
Do you believe the latter is the whole story?
I don't believe nothing these people be saying, but I'm different.
That was nice.
So I asked for the whole story.
Okay.
I asked for context and I challenged my own colleagues to understand context, right?
Right.
As someone who has seen kids being bullied growing up, right? I think the only reason I didn't get bullied is because I was a gigantic kid. you don't bully big kids, you know? But I remember I would step in if someone's getting bullied. And I always remember that it was about the context. And I try to bring that context into those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I challenge our folks to be like, hey, this kid did X, Y, and Z. Do you know why they did it? So as you know, there's like big five, right? You have to spell if like there's a weapon involved, gun, you know, sexual assault, things like that. There's obviously no challenging that.
Right.
Everything else is open to conversation. Mm-hmm. Everything else, literally everything else, it's a recommendation for expulsion.
Correct.
But that doesn't mean you have to expel. So I'm constantly trying to look at, can you give me the whole story? Can you give me full context? Looking at each other and trying to convince the other people
right,
without actually saying anything, because it's Brown Act violation if we start deciding things
right
closed doors.
Right.
And that's why we'll pull things off the agenda and be like, oh, I'm going to put this up for a vote. I guess what I'm saying is I look for parents who become involved. I look to see if the parents have been notified. I look to see what the kid has been up to. I look at their grades. I look to see what grade they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't feel comfortable expelling a ninth grader who just started school and had a run-in with somebody.
Right.
But if someone has repeatedly done the same offense over and over and they have not learned, and the question is also look at ourselves, like, have we done something to stop them from doing what they're doing?
Right.
Have we intervened? Have we helped them find the support that they need?
Mm-hmm.
We have to take into context familial issues, what's going on at home. Are they homeless? Are they couch surfing? Like, what is causing someone to actually act out? You know, part of it is like, y'all can wake up and you're hungry in the morning and you're grumpy.
Yeah.
Right? So imagine being grumpy for 24 hours because you haven't eaten anything for a day or two, right? And the only food you get is during lunch. You're going to get triggered no matter what, right? Does that mean you're a bad kid? Does that mean you don't want to get educated? No. And I've talked about this because folks have brought up homelessness with me at the district level. And I've told people that homelessness is completely linked in many ways to high school graduation. You will look that most folks who are homeless have not even graduated high school. Right. Every time we are putting kids in a position to not graduate and not make it out of high school, we are exacerbating the homelessness situation in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we actually fix it? When people say we're going to fix it, I'm like, no one comes to us. No one talks about supporting the school system at the city or county level at that in that way to say, hey, how about we address the situation here and try to make a difference? Instead, we get the Band-Aid fixes like, oh, there's this camp, there's that camp, we can't do anything about it. So I'm constantly thinking about that because my head goes straight there. Expulsion leads to bad outcomes leads to not passing high school. Not passing high school means you could end up on the street, or you're going to take a route that we don't want you to take, which includes drug dealing, doing other things that only actually hurts our own communities, right? It might look scary to some people, but in reality, you're drug dealing in your own neighborhoods. You're drug dealing around kids that you've grown up with, right?
Right.
So you're going into those positions because the system to some level has failed you, right? So.
Keela liked that.
I did.
But you said something that was very interesting to me. You said you look to see if the parents have been notified. And why are you looking to see that?
Well, so they definitely get notified. I look to see if.
Kind of. Sometimes they do. But go ahead.
Okay, so in the sense that have we been able to talk this through with them?
Okay.
People may get notified, like this is what happened. But there's also the parents who want to come in and say, yes, I acknowledge that this is happening with my kid. I acknowledge this happened, so I'd like to work on getting this fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You have parents who request a review.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening, right? And even if you get expelled, the expulsions are rarely forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'll be for like those 6 months or something. You can still come back. What I saw is that you can continue that expulsion, right? I really look to see what did you do in those last 6 months? Did your grades improve? Did something happen? Because I'm not saying I can stop every expulsion, right? But I definitely am constantly remembering, hey, this came up 5 months ago. The kid's trying to be reinstated. right? Can we actually bring them back in?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So those are conversations where we look to see, have the kids gotten support? Right. And I think this is something that I've been a big fan of some of our staff, especially the school safety team, because as you guys know, Sac City Unified does not have cops on campus.
Mm-hmm. I remember when they removed them. Shout out to Ray Lozada and your safety.
I'm just going to bring up Ray.
Yeah. I sat on his hiring panel. What's up, Ray?
Yeah. Ray's amazing. And part of the conversations I've had with him are community conversations, folks who are from those spaces who mm-hmm. have turned their lives around or now are safety officers on campuses. Maybe these two can talk about their interactions with safety officers, if ever. So that's a good thing. Probably.
Yeah. Wait, I saw a note and then what was that?
It's like they do their job, but they don't do their job.
I don't know. Explain that to me. I'm not like, on campus. What that mean?
Like security monitors are like those weird, like those brothers that you have that you call when something goes bad, but don't tell nothing about your plans, I guess to say. Because you can like go to them and talk to them about things.
Yeah.
But like when there's a problem, they're not really good at breaking it up. It's like they're not.
Wait. Like fights and things?
Like fights, arguments, things of that nature. They're not really good at like problem solving. It's more of a.
Are you talking about hall monitors? Or are you talking about
like
school safety officers?
Like school safety officers. Okay. Like when there's like an actual problem, you're like, okay, well, I'm trying to solve it. Like mm-hmm. trying to figure out what's going on. They don't really know how to solve it themselves. They kind of just be like, well, just don't fight. And leave you with that information and kind of just walk off.
Good idea.
Right, Ray, I'll talk to you when you're back from.
Oh, Lord. You're going to get Ray in trouble, Lord. Crispy, your experience with safety monitors? What'd you call them?
School safety officers.
School safety officers.
Kind of the same like him, really. That's really it. Yeah, that's really it. I don't have much to say about it.
You said that's really it? What part of it?
I don't know, because school safety, I don't know what to
do. Do you feel safe?
Well, no. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Good answers, no.
I'm gonna keep it brief. It vicious. Like they be trying
vicious.
Yeah, like the students are vicious.
The students are vicious.
Yeah, they be trying their hardest. It looked like they just summoned the Avengers to come fight to get one kid off of another kid.
Summon the Avengers.
Oh yeah. You may see.
I love the picture that you're painting right now. They're summoning the Avengers to get one kid off another kid. I mean,
you'll see 2-3 rush after somebody, and they'll still somehow get loose and still go back, and they'll still be rushing after them. It's like a world-ending threat.
Ooh.
I think, I don't know if fights have changed then.
Right. It used to be like 30 seconds and you're just done with it.
Yeah, or you find a location off campus. But
yeah, at a park or something.
Not 30 seconds.
I think what's striking about that is if the conversation goes back to police on campus, the conversation still goes back to what would be the difference be, right? The only difference in that situation, in my opinion, would be I'm pretty sure they're still human. They're all the same size. The police have a higher authority. But one thing that scares me in a situation like that is the ability to use other types of force.
100%.
Right? And that's the biggest fear, right? Mm-hmm. I try to figure out how to keep a good relationship with our police officers in Sac City. You know, I'm not saying these are easy jobs to do, but young people and whatever we can do to help need to also figure out how to address themselves and their issues in a different way, right? I did a presentation on the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment rights. This is like the first thing I did when I got to school, but I'm like, I'm going to do a presentation on what to do when a cop pulls you over.
Mm-hmm.
We had kids show up, and then we had some folks say, why don't you invite Sac PD, right? I'm like, well, people aren't going to show up and talk about what to do when a cop pulls you over if the cops are there. That doesn't even make sense, right? What we realized is I was trying to teach kids how to walk away. And I think that's okay. Don't we as adults teach each other to walk away from a situation?
Allegedly.
If that situation is involving you specifically. Mm. I'm not saying you should walk away if, you know, your friend's getting attacked or something, or you need to record, you have a legal right to record and stay there. I'm talking about it's not your business, or someone stops you and starts asking you questions. You have a legal right to be like, am I being detained? And if you're not, walk. Go home. That's it. Just leave. And I think I'm hoping what we can get to is our kids really learning that fights are not going to fix any situation. But you're young, you feel like this is like life or death. Like if I lose this fight today, everybody's going to laugh at me for like 4 years and my high school career is going to be over. In reality, no one cares. No one wants to get beat up, right? No one's that tough, right? I just wish that when you guys tell us things like this, then that means we have to reconfigure the way we approach these situations, because the idea of the Avengers showing up to stop a fight, to like, that takes three little adults, literal adults, to pull kids off. The issue is, why are we getting to that space in the first place, right?
Yeah.
I think building more relationships on campus, building better relationships with folks, and then trying to address these things early, right? And most of the time, it'll be students who are not doing well in school, students who are having other behavioral issues, and they get sent to the principal's office. Well, then if they get sent to the principal's office, what do we do there, right? Simply sitting in the office for 30 minutes and cooling off does not mean you address the situation. So I think that might be part of it. Like I could almost guess that none of us are going to get up right now and walk down the hallway and be like, I want to get in a fight, right?
No.
But something has led to that situation, something that should have been addressed. And now you add social media and you add Snapchat and the idea of being on TikTok and showcasing that you're being tough or you're doing something wild. That's been a whole learning process for me. I'm aging myself again. I refuse to be on TikTok because I'm like, that means I've gone into a different generation. I'm still on Instagram and that's where I stay. but it makes me think that that's what kids are doing. It's all about getting the views, finding popularity, and we have to figure out another way to help kids get popular.
Y'all said clout is the new drug. Is that what y'all were saying? Clout is the new drug, right?
Word too. I say it.
Yeah,
they eat it up like it's a good breakfast.
Clout?
Oh, yeah. First thing in the morning, can't walk into a classroom without somebody
like literally the lunchroom, man, bro. They fighting already.
Let me ask y'all a question. Did it get worse during the pandemic? Because I know a lot of folks was jawjacking, they was sending threats through social media, and then it was on site if they saw you.
Oh yeah, everybody was. That's the thing. It still goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's way more than it was during COVID, surprisingly. Because everybody really didn't see nobody during COVID.
That's why it's bad now, now you're seeing them.
Oh, yeah. But
and it's so funny because we've been to a couple of junior high schools around here. And the girls, they'll be fighting, but they'll be adding each other to group chats or on the Instagram or whatever the message is. Y'all
got a moment.
They run in a mob.
Who's they?
Girls, we talking like 20 deep for one instance. It'd be a one-on-one. 20 of them will run up just for one fight. I'd be like, wow,
on one person.
Yeah, they like it'd be like a one-on-one. Like, oh, I'll catch you outside. Da-da-da-da. They get there and you'll be like, oh, what's going on? That's how you know something about to go down, because you see a mob of girls running to one direction, and you be trying to mind your business, and then you see the trail of Avengers following them. It's bad, because you can't get through the crowd of girls that are just sitting there like, no, you can't get in, like, don't intervene, let them handle it. And they're like, no, we can't let you fight, like, this is kind of our job, we gotta like make sure everybody's safe on the campus. And they just sitting there once again 20 deep, not letting nobody through. Like it's bad.
So they come and they block it. So that,
yeah,
it's like a circle, right?
Yeah. It's like
okay. That's what I was
sometimes
like.
Sometimes it don't even be a circle. It just be like a whole crowd of people.
People just
run.
Ooh, that's real.
D1 cameraman.
So, you said D1 cameraman.
Yep.
No, literally. Like
they will be like right there next to the fight, just about to get hit. Talking about, wait, move. I almost got hit. Let me record. Move over. Like they will risk their lives to get that footage.
It's great evidence. So
it's good evidence, but they get mad when they like office be like, well, we gotta confiscate your phone so we can see what happened. They'd be like, no, you're not gonna take my phone. You take my phone, then we're gonna have to fight. I'd be like, why are you threatening the people that are?
But it'll get posted anyways. I think what worries me from hearing all this is like we do have to find that balance of like how do we address this, right? Again, I don't think expulsions is the answer to everything, right? And I don't think everything leads to an expulsion. I'm really thinking about the suspension rate data that you had talked about earlier. Suspensions have to come with an actual plan.
Facts.
Just suspending for 5 days is
and sending them home with no plan
does not mean you're going to come back next week like, wow, I sat home for 5 days with your phone watching the same fight over and over thinking actually that was pretty tight, like I did pretty good, right? That's the issue, right?
Yeah.
We don't have, and it's not I think this is where like a lot of I think a lot of issues that we all face as a community in general, as human beings, is accountability, right?
Yeah.
It's all accountability. Facts. We need to be accountable to our students to make sure we're creating a safe learning environment. We need our students to be accountable to themselves and making sure they're not creating unsafe environments for each other, because then we're pointing at the adults and saying, you know, they're running in, they're rushing in. At some point, what are they supposed to do? We want to step in by finding out what kids are doing before it gets to that point. But that also requires what adults to be sitting on the internet and like tracking like Snapchat and trying to figure out what everybody's up to. You can actually do that. You can actually figure out there's a fight that's about to happen based on someone who's posted enough saying this is where we're going to be at. And you can actually show up and probably be prepared for it. Right.
Right.
But sitting down, we used to have student counselors when I was in middle school, like campus student monitors. And we would come up and be like, hey, like you two would be fighting. I'd walk up to you, be like, hey, guys. Don't do that. It sounds so cheesy, but it actually worked in middle school, because at middle school, you're not thinking like a tough guy yet, right?
They different nowadays. They are.
I know. I don't know. Some of the kids at 24, I feel like they're middle schoolers and they're just like, they're just going hard. But I mean, I'll give you a serious example. I was at downtown 24 and there was a basketball game. This kid was getting really angry. And after like a little foul, they got in each other's face, right? And I was like, whatever, it's basketball, they'll get over it. No, buddy runs over to his backpack and pulls out a gun, right? And then no one's tough, right? I definitely wasn't tough. I started looking at the ceiling. And I wasn't a part of it. I was like, I was not a part of it. So I walked away, and he comes up to me, and the guy, he goes, like seeking validation for what he did. And I was like, no, man, I think you should leave. Like, you should actually leave pretty quick. Like, you should exit out of this building. I don't want to see you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I go to the parking garage and he's standing there with another man. And I don't know why I did this. I walk up to him and I was like, he looked calmer, right? I was like, hey, man, I just want to suggest to you that you really don't pull out a gun.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you have kids? Are you married? I just said all this stuff, like blurting out of my mouth, like questioning my own smartness in that moment, like why am I going with a random person? But he took it and he goes, I know what I did was wrong, but I wasn't going to get in trouble. It wasn't loaded, so it's not like it was going to be actual assault. And I was like, I turn around, I was like, I'm an attorney.
Brandishing.
I am an attorney. You absolutely could go away for attempted everything, right?
Yeah.
It all depends on what the DA charges you with, right? And I'm giving him this lesson, right? And he's like receiving it, and I was like, that's it. I did my job. I did my part. I didn't go to 24-hour fitness downstairs and rat on him to the person getting paid $16 an hour. They're not going to do anything about it. They didn't call the cops about it. I'm hoping that one situation led to him thinking twice. But that's me doing an intervention. We need multiple interventions like that every single day on campuses. And how much do you actually expect people to do when you have teachers who are 30, 35 students in their classroom trying to just keep everything together? You also expect them to be, you know, social workers.
Right.
You expect them to be parents in that situation, guardians in that situation. So it's just we have to figure out where to find that money. And that to some level, we need more folks advocating at the state and federal level for funding that actually addresses mental health and social health. Like, that's the issue. Like, we can't expect everything from our kids to magically know how to come back after 2 years of pandemic.
Yeah.
And we can't expect our teachers to do all this with the salaries that they get paid.
I agree. And go ahead, because we're running out of time. So I'm going to go to you really quickly. Do you want me to come to you too? Or are you good?
I'm okay.
Okay.
What is the school board's engagement like with students? Do you have a student representative? Because I feel like you're so hip and personable. And like, I feel like this conversation was really beneficial, not just for me, but like for students. And I think that conversations like this at the school board level with students could be really beneficial to, you know, solving these issues going forward.
Yeah, so we have a student rep at Sac City Unified. So student board member, right, is great. Student body council is the group that has an opportunity to actually present every 2 weeks. I wish they actually presented every 2 weeks. There's a lot of groups that just don't come and present. In terms of my interaction, I try to go to schools as much as I can. I think I feel really comfortable going to campuses. I mean, kids are funny. Like I went to a high school wearing shorts and Vans, and I was not trying to show up as a board member. I was actually showing up to see if I can, you know, rent the gym. And then the principal was like, "How can I help you?" I'm like, "Oh, sorry, I'm your board member. I just showed up looking like this." And I say that because I want kids to interact with their board members more. I think there are school board members. I mean, you know, to throw, I don't know if Chino's going to watch this, but I'll throw him under the bus for this. But he's always at school.
Yeah, he is.
At schools, right? Because he's a Sac City kid, right? He has like this deeper desire to build with the community. And then I think folks feel comfortable. I try to do the same thing. I try to go to school like at least every other week and talk to kids and talk to students and talk to parents, right? But I would love to do like a student assembly, right?
Let's do it.
And yeah, we can do it. I mean, I think part of it is like, these are great questions.
Right.
I bet you, I'm going to walk away with learning something today. I'm going to walk away and see, I was right about how kids think, right?
Yeah.
A lot of shifting, right? And we want to make sure that we're shifting with you. I don't want to say that your thoughts or the way you approach certain things are incorrect. I actually want to know how you approach things and whether we need to pivot, right, to address the needs that you have. If we keep saying, I'm young-ish, so this is how we did things back in the day. Well, back in the day is like 20 years ago.
But.
Right, so it's a whole different world. I know I've
25
aged myself way too much today, because part of that is like we are not doing enough to address your concerns. We think we know what we're doing, and I will say it's better than having super older people on boards. But and no hate on anyone who's on the older end of our school boards or anything like that. But you have to start wondering if you're not interacting with your constituents, right? Even though you guys are not of voting age, I know there's.
You will be soon.
Soon. And I also know that there are some places where they've asked for folks who are 16 to
be able to pre-register.
Well, there's actually places where they're trying to get 16-year-olds to vote for school boards.
Really?
And you think about it, do you think we would listen more if our constituents became our students to that level? Right?
I think so.
I would have to hold these meetings and make sure I'm addressing their concerns before I go out and ask for votes, right? And going back to what you said, I think engaging with students also includes engaging them at the political level, where like if there's campaigns coming up and we're running for something, for them to want to be involved, right? For them to see like the benefits of going door to door, knocking on doors. With the pandemic, I realized going door to door was its own challenge. And when I knocked on doors, I actually got excited to knock on doors because I was like, well, I haven't talked to people in like 2 years. My knock on this random door and be like, hey, what's up, man? And it was really beneficial to get an in-person conversation. And we had young people knocking for us. And they were like, wow, that was so cool. I'm like, yeah, because you've lost your ability and skill set to have an in-person human conversation because of the pandemic. I really am mad at the pandemic.
Aren't we all?
You know what? Y'all speak for yourself. I got a chance to sleep in a lot, and I loved it. But I want to ask you before we get out of here, I want to ask you guys, do you think conversations like this with folks who are elected to represent you, do you think these are helpful? Would you like to do more of these type of conversations with your school board members?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very helpful to me, especially. What about you, Cameron?
Yeah, what about you, Cameron?
I say that I like them. They're cool. I mean,
this guy.
I mean, it helps get a better understanding of like how like you get like everybody can get helped and get what they need. So
okay.
It's cool. Yeah, I like what's going on.
Okay. So there you have it from them.
Tough
crowd.
Well, we have run out of time for today, but we want to thank you guys for joining the conversation. Always feel free to come back here every Monday that we are streaming because we need more of this. We need more engagement. We need more because I've never met you before, but I feel like we're going to be really good friends as long as we don't have no problems that I have to show up. And then you might see a different side of me. Yes. But just know like I'm really nice, right?
I believe it.
Just know that. But check us out next week. We will have the CEO of Casa LA, right? Next week?
I believe.
Miss Charity Chandler Cole will be in the building. We get to talk to her about her book, Stranger Danger, as well as some of the stuff she has coming up. So don't hesitate to join us next week right here on Facebook and YouTube. We are Black versus the Board of Education. We're going to hit you with the peace sign and get out of here because we're over. We'll see you next week.